This is WBCRLP, Great Barrington. Hello and welcome to the Audio Book Review. I am your host, Jason Brown. I am a producer of audiobooks with Berkshire Media Artists, and as a producer, I think I have a different perspective on audio that may be of interest to you, if you like audiobooks, that is. On this program, I will be playing excerpts from what I think are some of the best New Age self-help audiobooks available. Now, I could have an entire program consisting of New Age audio. There's so much of it out there, and some of it's great. I'm only going to talk about several on this show, but I'm going to do more. I personally feel, just by playing this on the radio, that I'm helping the world a little bit. But I think all audio is self-help and self-improving. It helps you get to your destination and enriches the experience of it, for one. In one of the audio excerpts I will be playing, the Eckhart Tolle Power of Now audio, he mentions that 98% of our thoughts are repetitive and useless. He's actually trying to get people to turn those thoughts off by describing wonderful approaches and alternatives to thinking. You're probably thinking, like, what? What else is there besides thinking? That's what's great about this audio. Audiobooks are also a great alternative to one's repetitive thinking. If you can possibly observe your thoughts the way the Zen master Thich Nhat Hanh describes in his audio, The Ultimate Dimension, to be played in the future, it's amazing to see how right Eckhart Tolle is. Broken record, all the way, and useless, going on in our heads. One is better off just observing what one is doing all the time. That's what he says. Especially here in the Berkshires. What a beautiful summer it is. I find sometimes I'm so busy that I'll take a 3-mile walk through the woods and be thinking about something else completely different. My mind will be in a different location. Perhaps even 30. I don't know if anybody else does that. But that's the beauty of these audios. They are bringing ancient wisdom to a society that could really use it right now. With destruction of old growth forests, pollution, wars, these audios are beautiful. Now, it's not brilliant prose like Shakespeare, Milton, Anthony Poole, Sherlock Holmes, or Anne Sexton poetry. Psychologists that I've spoken with, professors of English, writers, and scholars, really do not like this stuff at all. They think it's too dumbed down and manipulative. Also, going for the quick buck, capitalizing on people's wounds, hurts, depressions, and struggles. That's a strong argument, and not without merit. But even so, it's not like the health insurance industry, is it? Unlike health insurance, these products actually do make people feel better. There's also beauty in its message, which is, you do not have to feel bad. I think there's a lot of love in it, and that's always good. There's love in Anthony Poole as well, as thousands of other fictions. But it's usually between other people. You're a passive observer watching it, or listening to it unfold. Almost voyeuristically. These self-help books are the first to talk to the listener directly. Self-help started out with how to become successful and make a lot of money stuff, positive thinking, awakening your giant within, how to get the edge in the corporate Darwinian playground, etc., etc. I've listened to those, and they're useful. Not life-changing. God forbid I should use those as a mold to set my life. I would be intolerable. And probably very inauthentic. These audios I'm about to play are life-changing. Byron Katie talks like she's having an intimate cup of coffee with you. And she's so full of love. Pema Chodron, who I will play on another show devoted to authors who are depths as well, has that same quality, and it's wonderful to have in the world. Our cynical side will say, well, if it's so full of love, why don't the authors or publishing houses give it away? I mean, aren't some of them making millions? Eckhart Tolle's A New Earth is an Amazon number 5 bestseller, and Power of Now, number 9. I say, who cares? This stuff works and helps a lot of people get through the day. maybe even enlightening some of them. I'm going to play a 10-minute excerpt from The Power of Now, because Eckhart is a lot of fun to listen to. He doesn't need to sell any more books. I'm not promoting it. He should leave some extra spending money for other people, authors. But people continue to buy anyway. Eckhart is basically making profound, mystical, and enlightened teachings very accessible. He's saying, someone's got to do it. Look at the world. We need this. I think he's right. You can always go to the source if you want, which for him are a lot of different texts. The Tao Te Ching, which both Wayne Dyer and Byron Katie expound on. Play some of that too. Zen Sutras, Rumi, and many others, and, you know, the Bible too. And I think a lot of people are going to the source, reading extra material, because of him. That's great. But he says you don't really have to. Just do it. Now. Here's The Power of Now.
Remember that your perception of the world is a reflection of your state of consciousness. You are not separate from it, and there's no objective world out there. Every moment, your consciousness creates the world that you inhabit. One of the greatest insights that has come out of modern physics is that of the unity between the observer and the observed. The person conducting the experiment, the observing consciousness, cannot be separated from the observed phenomena, and a different way of looking causes the observed phenomena to behave differently. If you believe, on a deep level, in separation and the struggle for survival, then you see that belief reflected all around you, and your perceptions are governed by fear. You inhabit a world of death and of bodies fighting, killing, and devouring each other. Nothing is what it seems to be. The world that you create and see through the egoic mind may seem a very imperfect place, even a veil of tears. But whatever you perceive is only a kind of symbol, like an image in a dream. It is how your consciousness interprets and interacts with the molecular energy dance of the universe. This energy is the raw material of so-called physical reality. You see it in terms of bodies and birth and death, or as a struggle for survival. An infinite number of completely different interpretations, completely different worlds, is possible and, in fact, exists, all depending on the perceiving consciousness. Every being is a focal point of consciousness, and every such focal point creates its own world, although all those worlds are interconnected. There's a human world, an ant world, a dolphin world, and so on. There are countless beings whose consciousness frequency is so different from yours that you are probably unaware of their existence, as they are of yours. Highly conscious beings who are aware of their connectedness with the source and with each other would inhabit a world that to you would appear as a heavenly realm, and yet all worlds are ultimately one. Our collective human world is largely created through the level of consciousness we call mind. Even within the collective human world, there are vast differences, many different subworlds, depending on the perceivers or creators of their respective worlds. Since all worlds are interconnected, when collective human consciousness becomes transformed, nature and the animal kingdom will reflect their transformation. Hence the statement in the Bible that in the coming age, the lion shall lie down with the lamb. This points to the possibility of a completely different order of reality. The world as it appears to us now is, as I said, largely a reflection of the egoic mind. Fear being an unavoidable consequence of egoic delusion, it is a world dominated by fear. Just as the images in a dream are symbols of inner states and feelings, so our collective reality is largely a symbolic expression of fear and of the heavy layers of negativity that have accumulated in the collective human psyche. We are not separate from our world, so when the majority of humans become free of egoic delusion, this inner change will affect all of creation. you will literally inhabit a new world. It is a shift in planetary consciousness. The strange Buddhist saying that every tree and every blade of grass will eventually become enlightened points to the same truth. According to St. Paul, the whole of creation is waiting for humans to become enlightened. That is how I interpret his saying that the created universe is waiting with eager expectation for God's sons to be revealed. St. Paul goes on to say that all of creation will become redeemed through this. Up to the present, the whole created universe in all its parts groans as if in the pangs of childbirth. What is being born is a new consciousness and, as its inevitable reflection, a new world. This is also foretold in the New Testament book of Revelation. Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away. But don't confuse cause and effect. Your primary task is not to seek salvation through creating a better world, but to awaken out of identification with form. You are then no longer bound to this world, this level of reality. You can feel your roots in the unmanifested and so are free of attachment to the manifested world. You can still enjoy the passing pleasures of this world, but there is no fear of loss anymore, so you don't need to cling to them. Although you can enjoy sensory pleasures, the craving for sensory experience is gone, as is the constant search for fulfillment through psychological gratification, through feeding the ego. You are in touch with something infinitely greater than any pleasure, greater than any manifested thing. In a way, you then don't need the world anymore. You don't even need it to be different from the way it is. It is only at this point that you begin to make a real contribution towards bringing about a better world, towards creating a different order of reality. It is only at this point that you are able to feel true compassion and to help others at the level of cause. Only those who have transcended the world can bring about a better world. You may remember that we talked about the dual nature of true compassion, which is awareness of a common bond of shared mortality and immortality. At this deep level, compassion becomes healing in the widest sense. In that state, your healing influence is primarily based not on doing, but on being. Everybody you come in contact with will be touched by your presence and affected by the peace that you emanate, whether they are conscious of it or not. When you are fully present and people around you manifest unconscious behavior, you won't feel the need to react to it, so you don't give it any reality. Your peace is so vast and deep that anything that is not peace disappears into it as if it had never existed. This breaks the karmic cycle of action and reaction. Animals, trees, flowers will feel your peace and respond to it. You teach through being, through demonstrating the peace of God. You become the light of the world, an emanation of pure consciousness, and so you eliminate suffering on the level of cause. You eliminate unconsciousness from the world. This doesn't mean that you may not also teach through doing, for example, by pointing out how to disidentify from the mind, recognize unconscious patterns within yourself, and so on. But who you are is always a more vital teaching and a more powerful transformer of the world than what you say, and more essential even than what you do. Furthermore, to recognize the primacy of being and thus work on the level of cause does not exclude the possibility that your compassion may simultaneously manifest on the level of doing and of effect by alleviating suffering whenever you come across it. When a hungry person asks you for bread and you have some, you will give it. But as you give the bread, even though your interaction may only be very brief, What really matters is this moment of shared being, of which the bread is only a symbol. A deep healing takes place within it. In that moment, there is no giver, no receiver.
But there shouldn't be any hunger and starvation in the first place. How can we create a better world without tackling evils such as hunger and violence first?
All evils are the effect of unconsciousness. You can alleviate the effects of unconsciousness, but you cannot eliminate them unless you eliminate their cause. True change happens within, not without. If you feel called upon to alleviate suffering in the world, that is a very noble thing to do. But remember not to focus exclusively on the outer. Otherwise, you will encounter frustration and despair. Without a profound change in human consciousness, the world's suffering is a bottomless pit. So don't let your compassion become one-sided. Empathy with someone else's pain or lack and a desire to help need to be balanced with a deeper realization of the eternal nature of all life and the ultimate illusion of all pain. Then let your peace flow into whatever you do, and you will be working on the levels of effect and cause simultaneously.
I think that's wonderful, and what a great speaker. I wonder what he sounded like before he was enlightened. I could listen to him forever. Centered, calm, knowledgeable, sounding very sure about what he's talking about, and I think full of care, soothing. You have total trust in him. That's a very unique audio quality. Time for a public service announcement.
Hi, this is Chelsea Handler reminding you that a good audiobook speaks for itself. Get caught listening.
With an audiobook, my ears open my eyes, and my imagination travels with me wherever I go, with CD or MP3, on the beach, on the road, at home. Nothing's more inspiring than getting lost in the story as my imagination turns the pages. A good audiobook speaks for itself. Get caught with the literary rhythms of a good audiobook. Get caught listening.
I like that. The literary rhythms of a good audiobook. What a great description. These are library PSAs to encourage book reading and listening. Are they the same? That was writer Lisa Scottoline, author, best-selling thriller of Lady Killers, Daddy's Girl, Dirty Blonde. And before that, actress and comedian Chelsea Handler. Her book and audio is called Are You There, Vodka? It's me, Chelsea. Maybe I'll review that. I have an audio confession. I used to like Wayne Dyer's audiobooks a lot. I thought he had a great voice, but after listening to Eckhart, I have a whole new perspective. Wayne, in my mind, went from someone who sounds like they're bursting with love and care for you to someone who's trying a little too hard to convince you of something. Especially in his latest audio, Commentaries on the Tao Te Ching, which is called Change Your Thoughts, Change Your Life. Right off the bat, I thought that was an odd name for a book about the Tao Te Ching. Why didn't he just call it Reflections on the Tao Te Ching? Instead of the generic title that could be used for any book. I still like Wayne Dyer's message is full of love. It's beautiful stuff. But I must say, Eckhart makes him sound 70s. Nightingale Conant, you know, just a tad. Eckhart Tolle starts by saying that every moment your consciousness creates the world that you inhabit. That's very Buddhist. Buddhism is very psychological, as it deals with the function of the mind more so than Christianity does. It's also in William James, who has not been recorded at all. That's on my production list. He makes it sound simple, but these are actually complex thoughts and hard to take in, especially if your life's all a bustle, and even harder to practice. He makes it sound even simpler in the audio version. He was a research scholar at Cambridge University. In one of his lectures, I can't remember which, he discloses how too much thinking can drive one mad. I agree with that. One of his brilliant professors committed suicide just out of the blue, shocking the entire college. And later, Eckhart would find himself on the precipice of intolerable, tortuous thoughts when all of a sudden his ego, through so much violent, intense bombardment, just crumbled, disintegrated through some kind of stress, and vanished, leaving him free to be enlightened. And then he hung out on park benches for a year, being blissfully happy. I'm not sure how he ate or paid the rent, but evidently people caught on to this friendly and happy chap and realized he had found something very valuable. What's interesting is that the next author I am about to play an excerpt from also almost checked out early, too. Eckhart does say we don't have to go through any of that, that we can do it any time. In fact, he encourages us not to. But I find it interesting that they went that far. Obviously, there is a huge amount of wisdom to be gained from a near-death experience, which is part of the beauty of these audiobooks. Byron Katie is known for her best-selling book, Loving What Is. What's impressive about her is that she's the only other living author that Eckhart Tolle ever mentions in his books or lectures. He quotes her and calls her his friend. I tried reading Loving What Is and had a tough time with it, although I loved her Socratic questioning process of the people she was attempting to enlighten. It just took too long. But after Eckhart's mention, I kept an open mind, and then she came out with 1,000 Names for Joy, commentaries on the Tao Te Ching, subtitled Living in Harmony with the Way Things Are. And she really goes deep with the way things actually are. Accepting reality as it is also Buddhist, but it's Nietzsche, Amor Fati, loving one's fate, loving reality without protecting our ego with self-serving thoughts, totally distorting reality in the process. So it's brilliant audio, and Byron Katie is truly incredible, and I can see why both Eckhart and Wayne talk about her frequently. Stephen Mitchell, her husband, does the translation of the Tao Te Ching, and has an audiobook of it as well. It's a great and well-respected translation. He has also translated Rilke, the Duno Elegies, also on my iPod. He reads from his translation at the beginning of her short chapters to introduce what she is commenting on. Some of these comments are mind-blowing. I sometimes listen to them on a beautiful morning out on the deck, and it makes the whole day. This is from 1,000 Names for Joy by Byron Katie.
Can you coax your mind from its wandering and keep to the original oneness?
When you don't believe your thoughts, what is what you are. There's no separation in it. You're everything. Only the unquestioned mind would believe that you're an I living inside a body. What is the original oneness? Chair, hand, cup, window, sky, before chair, hand, cup, window, sky. You don't need to return to it since you've never left. How could you leave it? Where else is there to go? The center of the universe is wherever you are, and it's everywhere. It's the origin and the end point, the beauty of darkness, the exaltation of nothing. And only the center is real. When you understand that, you realize that even oneness is unnecessary. It's like falling in love with yourself. There's nothing to do, no one to be, no responsibility, no meaning, no suffering, no death. You no longer believe yourself into a separate, distant polarity where you're identified as a tiny speck making grandiose efforts to prove that something is true. Realizing that you've never left the original oneness means that you were never born and you can never die. What suppleness this realization allows. You're immune to anything the mind would superimpose onto reality. Any disappointment or sorrow. If I lose all my money, good. If I get cancer, good. If my husband leaves me, good. If my husband stays, that's good too. Who wouldn't always say yes to reality if that's what you're in love with? What can happen that I wouldn't welcome with all my heart? I don't know what's best for me or you, or the world. I don't try to impose my will on you or on anyone else. I don't want to change you or improve you or convert you or help you or heal you. I just welcome things as they come and go. That's true love. The best way of leading people is to let them find their own way. One day, a few years after I first found the work inside me, my sons began to fight in our living room. I was sitting on the couch, very close to them. They were two grown men in their 20s, and here they were on the floor wrestling and pummeling each other and yelling, "Mom, Mom, make him stop." All I saw were two men trying to connect, not knowing another way. I sat there just watching them, just loving them. And in that moment, I didn't have the slightest thought of intervening. There was no doing or trickery to it. And suddenly they noticed, and they stopped fighting. I love that they found their own solution. That was the last time they ever fought.
That's amazing. And to think that she's practicing what she preaches. I want to be like that. To be able to do that. And she's saying it's easy. You can do it. You just think you can't because you've identified with your thoughts and you think that's who you are, when in fact, you have no idea who you are. These are profound concepts hidden in these New Age audios. My favorite line is the opening. When you don't believe your thoughts, whatever is what you are. I mean, you could just dwell on that for years. That's almost like a Zen koan. The question would be, what is whatever is? Now that's a Zen koan. I think the answer would be you. Am I getting too far out for a local radio? Or any radio? We're about out of time on the audiobook review. Funny thing to say after all that timeless wisdom. I've been your host, Jason Brown. Thanks for tuning in, and I hope you had a good time. See you next week.